listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You are a bright light bringing love to the world. It emanates from your heart when you're kind and gentle. These are the words that open the book of my guest today, Stanford University professor and spiritual teacher Anders Nilsson. We're talking today about the gentle way of the heart. Welcome to Full Power Living. This is where we illuminate the power and importance of human emotions. We broadcast over Blog Talk Radio and on emotionalpro.com, and we distribute through iTunes. So also, please call us toll-free at 888-498-0570 to share your thoughts and questions. Well, my guest today is Anders Nilsson, PhD. He's a professor of photon science at Stanford University in California. He was born in Sweden, and he got a PhD in physics from Uppsala University in Sweden. He's also co-authored over 250 scientific papers and one scientific book. Currently, he studies the fundamental properties and structure of liquid water and also chemical energy transformations on surfaces. He also has led numerous spiritual workshops in Sweden as part of nurturing a strong spiritual awakening that began for him in the 1990s. He's now author of his first spiritual book, which we're discussing today, The Gentle Way of the Heart, Discover the Light Within. Anders Nilsson, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you very much, Eileen. It's a pleasure to be on the air today with you.
Yes, we have to say to our listeners, sorry that we had a little trouble connecting. I'm in California and Anders is in Sweden today. So this is truly an international broadcast. So Anders, in writing your book, you want people to know that there's another way to live life, different from how we usually live, that allows us to get past fear, be loving, be at choice, and create lives that are full of love and also synchronicity. And that's what you're calling the gentle way of the heart. Can you tell us something about what you wanted to offer people in writing The Gentle Way of the Heart?
I just wanted to show a different way from how many people might consider also spirituality. And the purpose is really that we can live a spiritual life, by having what I call a gentle approach to it, where we really seek kindness and gentleness in every movement we do. Both, first of all, towards ourselves. That's very, very important, that we are kind and gentle to ourselves. It's not to fool ourselves to avoid seeing the truth, but it's just to have that as an approach as much as we can. And we will lose it all the time. We will get upset, we will get angry and so on. But as we have that as our goal, we can easily go back to it, to be gentle and kind. Because when we are gentle and kind, we show our true self, who we really are. Because our inner nature is a loving being. And we will connect more with our inner being, who we really are, when we are gentle and kind. And it feels good. Everybody knows that it feels really good when we do that. And the reason it feels good, because we are who we are at that moment.
So I think something I really want to emphasize that you brought out there is that when you're being a loving being, gentle in your heart, you may not always be gentle and loving. You might still be afraid, or you might still get angry. But the aim really is to have a way of bringing yourself back to the gentleness. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I call it often that you have one hand in the light and love in your heart, and then the other hand you reach out to the challenges of the day, and you try to be simply connected from within to the world you live in, to the events that happen in every day. Mm-hmm. And by having this approach, a lot of things will change, actually. Your view of the world, the view of other people, and how you can feel connected to what happens in your life, and also how you feel connected to other people. And I think this is very important for our world to strive for this, because I'm a scientist. I know the fantastic thing we can do in the future with science, but we have to use it coming from this aspect within ourselves. Then we can transform the society and build something just unbelievable for the future.
Mm-hmm. And having experienced some of this way of living, though I didn't call it by the same name, it's like you're... sometimes it's like your life is enchanted in a way. Everywhere you go, you have wonderful encounters with people. People are loving and nice back to you. Things work more easily. They work out more easily. You don't get upset. I had an experience in the airport in Dallas, Texas, a couple of months ago, and it turned out my flight had been canceled altogether, but it wasn't announced on the board that showed the departing flights, and it wasn't announced on the internet either. And yet did with a man at an information booth who went and found out what had happened and rerouted me and had me flying out of there 5 minutes later.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I mean, life is always going to bring us interesting situations, and we will, of course, encounter, as I call, challenges. And I had actually today a very challenging day myself. Yeah. And it happens all the time. Things does not always work out as we think. But it's very important then to come back. And as you practice, you have easier to come back.
Yes, yes. Well, you have so many wonderful things. Your book is full of quotes that I just love. And one of them, you're talking about to get to the gentle way of the heart, you work with acceptance and forgiveness. And you say you have to accept the present moment, ourselves, others, and that then becomes the same as love. And forgiveness is involved, and you say forgiveness is acceptance of the past, where we release in the present moment what was held back from our light within. Can you talk some about that?
Yes, usually when, you know, if you think about it, the past is the past. We cannot change the past. It has happened. But often we relive the past all the time, and we cannot change it. It is what it is. So we are reliving the past, and often we do that in agony. It doesn't bring happiness to us when we're reliving the past, but if we let go of it in the present moment, and the way to let go of it is to accept it. Simply we accept what has happened. And that then becomes forgiveness. Because forgiveness, in my own view, is the same as accepting. We accept that the other person actually might have done something that was painful or hurtful to us. We accept the other person. We don't hold anything back towards them, and we release thereby the past. And one of the most difficult things for us that usually comes with forgiveness is also the forgiveness to ourselves. There is a piece of it often where we allow something happen to us, and we are holding that back also towards ourselves. And mm-hmm. and so forgiveness is a very important piece, is actually to forgive yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you forgive yourself, you also accept yourself, and then you love yourself.
And you also have a beautiful statement. I going through your book, I just love these. Love has no need to be loved by others, and no expectation that love comes from a divine source outside of ourselves. We will not find more love by rearranging the circumstances of our life, but by realizing that we are all the source of love within ourselves, and it's available to us at times. So you're saying that we discover all expressions of love. There's no shortage of love, and we do that by going through our own heart. Am I understanding you correctly?
Absolutely. And because What I'm talking about now is the more agape, the unconditional love, so to speak, not maybe what many people think about romantic love, but it's the love that is not related to sexual or romantic. And so I describe love often in such a way that it is all about to remove barriers. So when we accept something, we have no barrier to it. We can bring it towards us. We can feel connected to it. And that is actually what love is. It's to remove barrier. Because as we remove barrier, we simply see things exactly how they are. And we feel it too. We feel that connection within ourselves. And that is what love is all about.
But things get in our way. As children, we develop what you call a false self, and we have both a false self and a true self. And as I understand you, we aim to let the false self go so that we can live in our true self. Is that so?
I sometimes not say that you will let your false self go it's often a little piece of you that was split off from being connected to your own divine source. And you split that off because you couldn't handle some situation. It was too painful. It was too scary. Something happened to you. And as that split off, it's sort of not connected. And thereby it's running its own, let's say, agenda, its own life. And often we do not want to feel that original pain that actually caused us to be split off. And that false self is doing everything it can to maneuver us in such a way to avoid to be in circumstances where we might be, let's say, have a recall or remembrance or actually feel again the old pain. So the path forward is to connect again to that false self and transform it in such a way that it become connected with the love within, with our true nature. And as it actually does become connected, it becomes one again with us. So it's not really to alienate, let's say, destroy it or try to completely disconnect it and throw it away. It's sort of more to bring it back into where it came from, as being the part of us, our true self, to transform into being another piece of our true self. And often what people will discover as they are transforming their false self, it actually brought something back to them. It's often a property of let's say, their personality that could be a very powerful source for the future. It's actually, you become more whole, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I think you give an example about yourself as a public speaker that might relate here, where you were afraid of speaking to larger groups, and you did this very thing. You loved that part of yourself back into you, and now you don't have a problem with that.
That is true. I remember the first time I was going to give a talk at an international conference, and I was so nervous. I thought I was going to throw up actually on stage. It was horrible. And I love to give lectures. I really love it because it's public, particularly to the public. I'd give a lot of lectures to scientists also, but to the public, because it's very easy to connect with your heart to all the audience, with the public. They are usually having a very open mind and very, very curious and so on. But on the path there, I practiced a lot how to open myself up to go on stage. I actually introduced some little tricks for myself, how to do that, and let go and just be myself as much as I could when I gave a speech.
That's really great. I'm a professional speaker also, and I had an experience back in the 90s where I was on the board of directors, and a lot of people knew me, and I got up to give this little 10-minute speech. And I'd been working on allowing individuals to love me. Yet when I got up to give this speech, my friends in the audience gave me practically a standing ovation before I opened my mouth. And I did very well with the speech, but right in the middle of it, I couldn't remember what I was saying. I went mute for about a half a minute. And later I realized it was because I hadn't yet opened myself to receive love from a group of people.
And after that half a minute, you can continue in a different way.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I like your inclusiveness. So you're really talking about not taking a part of you that maybe causes you difficulty or that you don't like, and saying, I don't want that anymore, but saying, look, this is still a part of me, and what I'm going to do is love it and bring it back into resonance with who I really am.
That is exactly true, and this is, of course, not always that trivial how to do that, but it's just to have the vision of, to see that whatever it is, usually something making you a little bit uncomfortable, you get frustrated, you get irritated, you might get angry, and when this happens, you become a little bit unaware, you become a little bit unconscious,
mm-hmm.
and you go on autopilot to respond in a certain way. What is important is to just notice when that happens, and then you pause. It's like you back reflect on yourself for a second,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't let it take over. You don't let that to take over. Instead, you work to feel it the maximum. You feel what it feels like to be having fearful reaction. You feel it through, but you don't let it take over. It's like you bring awareness into the moment when you have the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to become intimate with it, and then you can bring it towards you.
So I want to tie what we've been saying together with another quote of yours that I like. You say your true self unconditionally loves all aspects of you, even when your false self has done horrible things. There's no need of judgment on your behalf, only the realization of the opportunity to make more loving and truthful choices next time. Now, that's an interesting quote, Anders, because I was a single parent and I developed a way of parenting my children. And one of the little tricks that I learned was that when my child made a mistake or when I made a mistake, if we set our intention for how we would do things differently next time, we grew and we didn't fall into judgment. So I really like that quote that making better choices next time. That's all any of us can do.
Yes, and that comes also with acceptance. So you accept the present moment, what it is, even though it might be uncomfortable, and you accept the past, and you forgive yourself that you allow the past to happen to you. But next time, you might make another choice. Next time, the next moment, you could act on to make it different.
Now, here's another thing that you talk about in the gentle way of the heart that I think is really important. I've done some work on this. A lot of people are afraid of being affected or harmed by others. But you say, as long as you hold the pure light inside, no one can touch or harm your true self, not even the most unimaginable evil force. Can you say a little bit about how being safe in our true self allows us to feel secure when we're in unknown circumstances or we're facing the unknown?
Because when we have the realization of our true self, and we can sense it deeply within
mm-hmm.
living our true self, we have a sense that this is something beyond this world. We only have an experience of this world. A little bit like going to the movie theater, we have a life that we experience. And our true self is just having an experience of this life. And our true self is something much larger, it's beyond time and space. And just as we are, when we are seeing a movie theater and we are in the middle of a movie and there could be something very scary or something, you know, very uncomfortable or very dramatic that happens, we always feel safe sitting in this chair in the movie theater. It's a little bit like the same that we can be connected with that aspect of ourselves that actually knows within that I'm always going to be okay. I am something which is magnificent, and I will exist beyond time and space. And that is simply that source that brings harmony and comfort, love, forgiveness, acceptance, all of these attributes to in our life. And I think many people, most people have experienced this, is that they haven't named it like that. Because you can experience, when you are in some magical moments in your life, like seeing some extraordinary beauty, you are connected to this. You are looking into the eyes of your loving partner, or you are with your child, or whatever it is. You feel this. You are connected with that within deep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been a psychotherapist in California. This month marks my 43rd anniversary.
Wow.
And I've been doing it a long time. And one of the things, I work as a transpersonal therapist, so I'm bringing spirit. I try to help people bring their lives into harmony with spiritual principle, as I understand it. And one of the concepts that seems to be hard for people is to, like, say, for example, if they say, I don't trust somebody, I offer them that the real issue is that they don't trust themselves. And as soon as you trust yourself or love yourself or forgive yourself, then it's very easy to do that with others. And miraculously, and I put that in quotes, miraculously, other people become trustable and they become truthful and so forth when we do that ourselves. Can you talk about that from the perspective of the gentle way of the heart?
Yeah, I mean, that comes exactly with what we talked about, that when you trust yourself, your own life, your choices in your life, and so on, you might have realized that you have done maybe not the perfect choice, or we should actually leave the word perfection out of it, but you might have not made, let's say, such loving choice in the past. You strive all the time after to make the best possible choice you can do, and that is a process of trust. To trust that you actually will always try to do the best. I believe that is actually something everybody's doing. It's just simply that people are maybe conducting an evil act. They are so obsessed with their false self. And from their false self, they are thinking they are doing the best they can. It's simply that everything is so obscured coming from their false self. But they still try to do the best they can based on that strange, let's say, perception of the reality at that time. So we strive after to do the best we can in every situation. And when we have realized that we could have made another choice, we have to step back and look at it and say, I forgive myself that I actually did that, mm-hmm. and I move on.
Mm-hmm. Now, thank you. In the Gentle Way of the Heart, you have a whole chapter on fear, and I just conducted an hour-long workshop on fear, so I'm interested in what you have to say. First of all, you say fear is what love is not. And you also, at least the way I have talked about this, is when fear comes up, you can't ignore it. You need to step into it. This is the way I've talked about it. And you seem to talk about fear the same way. It's like fear, just like the false self, is there to teach you something. Yes?
Absolutely. And fear, I call it the fear is actually your best friend.
uh-huh.
Because I actually had before, at an early stage, I had the name of that chapter, instead of transforming fear, it was actually called fear, your best friend fear. Because it's exactly this, it's there to teach you. Because it gives you you could say a searchlight where you can find more love, because fear is what has prevented you from having more love, because you have actually put up barriers, you have preventing you to go in a certain direction, preventing you from something. And by going instead towards the fear, or embracing the fear, whatever you want to use language here, we will actually eventually, by transforming that, find more love, become more whole.
Hmm. That's really...
We shouldn't run away from fear. In that sense, we should go towards it. But as we go towards it, we should do it in a gentle and kind way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have another quote of yours. Like I said, I enjoyed reading. You have a very succinct way of putting it. You say, fear is born from emotions in the past and created by our thoughts about the future. And you also remind us that when fear is based on past pain, that allows our false self to take over, and that's when we close down on the love in our heart.
Usually, it is we are afraid of the fear. It's not usually the fear itself; it's that we are afraid of it. So, when a fearful reaction comes up, we are afraid of it. So we thereby run away a little bit with our awareness. We forget ourselves to be alive, and that is typically what happens.
You're saying we're afraid of fear.
Yes.
I had an interesting experience, and you listeners who have been listening here will remember this. A couple of months ago, I was invited to go on a cruise in the Western Caribbean, and I decided that I was going to do a few things on my bucket list. Now, I have been working on the issue of fear for the last 22 years. When I got to be 50 years old, I said, I don't want to be afraid anymore. I've been afraid my whole life. And I developed a technique that works for me, which, when I read your book, is essentially I invited love into my heart on a permanent basis. And I haven't felt very much fear at all for the last 20 years. But I thought that I might still have fear when I went into physical situations. But I went zip lining, I went swimming with dolphins, and I swam with a jaguar as well, and I didn't experience a second of fear.
That's wonderful. But I believe it's like this, Eileen, that we will always experience fear in our life. There is just another layer, and there are circumstances that will bring that in. We might have less fear, or we might not let fear take over our life to the same extent, but there will always be some component of it there, and I feel it all the time. I feel it all the time, but I'm very aware of it. I try to be very aware of it, and I try to not let it take over.
Well, I was surprised. I expected to find it in those circumstances, and I didn't. And so it certainly lends credence to what you're talking about, which is that you don't have to live in fear. And as we stated earlier in the show, when you experience fear, you can get back to the love and the divine love in your heart, and you don't have to stay there.
That is exactly true. Could I just comment one thing, Eileen? Well, you
certainly.
Before you were out there swimming with the dolphin, which is something I do all the time myself. Were you afraid? Were you afraid of water or swimming or something?
No.
Because in some of my workshops, I had I brought people in Sweden. Usually at the end of the summer, the ocean can be a little bit chilly, and I had people to go in and swim in the water. And there were a particular two women I remember in the group who hadn't swam for 10 years. And after we practiced how to open the heart, going into the water, breathing through that cold water and so on, they were out. I couldn't get them out of the water. They released all the fear. They transformed it. And as we went into the water, they were breathing deeply. We opened the heart. And they brought in, you know, the sensation of the water, and they were also completely intimate with their fearful reaction going into the cold water and doing all that. And it transformed them to love to go back and swimming again.
That's beautiful. So now you use a term right there. They opened their heart. So for people who are listening, how do you open your heart?
I have in the book a little bit of an exercise how you can do it, but I think everybody has to find their own path into it. I sometimes help people by doing it because I can actually physically do it a little bit, but I would put it like this. The first step is to find this place, what I call to just exist. you just have to go in beingness. When you can look out of the window and see something beautiful, maybe seeing nature or seeing the city or whatever it is, and you just fall into the sensation that you exist. You don't need to think anything or having any particular sensation or feeling. It is only to have that deep sensation that you exist, and you don't need to do anything. You just be there. And as you are in that place of pure existence, you can start to focus on the warmth around your chest. Everybody can feel that, a little bit of a warmth. And you can breathe into that warmth. And you can imagine that as that warmth is like something radiating within your chest. And then you could imagine as the next step, as you would see a little portal in your chest, that you can open in your own imagination and feel how that warmth radiates out and from your body, radiates in your body to all your cells, to every piece of you. And it also radiates out to connect to everything that is outside. When you do that as an exercise, that you actually open your heart.
Right. Thank you. I was following along. Boy, just by listening to this show, they can do that exercise. I will note that at the end of each of your chapters, you do have exercises to help people put the things we're talking about into place, which I think is really good. I need to take a minute or two here to make some announcements, Anders, regarding the show. First of all, I'd like you who are listening to sign up at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list. And we'll send you details of upcoming shows and also keep you up to date on the Global Academy. I have a gift for you there, which is a information on the 7 signals of common emotions that you can that will help you as you work with your emotions. And also, there is a logo that you can click on to take you to the CCFL Global Academy, which is a group of 31 experts from a wide number of disciplines, including myself, that we're sharing our wisdom, answering questions, addressing issues that impact you and your family and your children on a daily basis. And my own expertise at the CCFL Global Academy is in emotional mastery and ending codependence. You can become a member for less than $1 a day, and the fastest way for you to get there is to go to emotionalpro.com and click on the CCFL Global Academy logo, and it'll take you right there. Next week on Full Power Living, we have Dr. Michael Platt, who's discussing a revolutionary approach to wellness as we talk about adrenaline dominance. Adrenaline, as we all know, is released as part of our reaction to fear and stress, which we've just been talking about. And that means a lot of us have plenty of adrenaline released in us. And he talks about the negative impact this has in terms of diseases and syndromes that are very hard for us to deal with. And he talks to us about what he will talk with me about what to do to reduce the effects of the adrenaline, and that's next Thursday, May 7th at 9 a.m. Pacific and noon Eastern. So thank you for those announcements. So, Anders, I want to talk to you about choices. When I was raising my children, I came to the conclusion that one of the most important things I could teach my children is how to make choices and how to look at those choices and see if they fit for them and if not, to make new choices. And you talk about choices. You have a whole chapter on choices in The Gentle Way of the Heart. Tell us about choices.
Yeah, choices is, of course, one of the key elements in our life because it gives the direction of our life, how we actually evolve. It's very important that we strive to make choices coming from our true self. Because we always make sometimes very small choices, but even a small choice can be very, very important. And occasionally we are actually up for big choices, maybe changing our work or getting married or a divorce or whatever it is. So we are facing choices all the time. And the importance is, are we going to make the choice coming from our true self, or are we going to make the choice coming from our false self? Is it going to be love-driven or fear-driven as we are actually making the choice? And you can actually monitor this a little bit with yourself. If something happens and you are feeling that you want to respond, or you're making a choice by being angry, irritated, frustrated, jealous, or whatever it is, you know that you're going to make a choice coming from your false self.
Mm-hmm.
So in these circumstances, when you have that reaction, you take a deep breath, you calm yourself down for a second. Maybe if you have practiced to be connected to your heart, you do that. And then you can see if you can actually look at the situation again and maybe decide to make another type of choice. And when you make a choice coming from your true self, it somehow feels good.
It might be
feel scary too, because it might be that there is fear in the way of making that choice. Because now you have to make a choice that you're a little bit afraid of going. Let's say I'm afraid of giving a speech, and I'm making a choice to give a talk. And I know somehow that this is in my path, my life path, to give a talk, to be more out there in the world. So I might have a fearful reaction to make that choice of speaking. But I'm not coming from a point where I'm angry, irritated, or frustrated. I'm coming still from the point that it feels like something I should do, but in front of me, there is something that is stopping to make that choice. And I work on it to actually feel the fear. If the fear is too big, we probably should take it very calmly and very carefully, because we don't want to push ourselves too hard. But it's just that it feels good to make the choice somehow, even though you might have a fear in front of it. And that is what to strive for. I think many listeners know this. We get an email, and the email upsets us. And how easy it is to immediately press reply and then write something and just press send very fast. And then we made a choice coming often from our false self. And for many of us, when we have done that, we know maybe a few hours later we think, oh my God, why did I send that email?
Yes.
Why did I send that email? And so I think everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. It happens to me too. And it's just to learn, you know, to maybe you respond, you never send the email, you read it again, or you before you send it, or it's like an itchy feeling within ourselves to respond or make it a little bit of choice. It's like for a second we think we will feel good by doing that, but it comes from this itchy feeling of irritation, frustration, anger, and so on. And it's just to take a deep breath, release that a little bit, and then seek to come from your true self. And this is how we're going to maneuver our life in a very different direction than we do.
Right. And I again, I would say step by step, you offer guidance for that in the gentle way of the heart, which is very, very helpful. One of the other things that I enjoyed reading in your book was a discussion about good and bad. And for a long time, I have said I don't believe in good and bad, and I've had people who are upset with me. You know, how can you make proper choices if you don't make a discernment between good and bad? And I said, well, it's not good or bad. It just is. It's all part of everything. That fits with what you're saying in the gentle way of the heart, too, does it not?
I mean, I think I described it a little bit in the chapter what I call the experience of life. And it's a little bit like we will always encounter in our life a situation where we might have a feeling of this is not good, this is unpleasant. Maybe we didn't get the job we wanted, or someone said something that we are not appreciated, or something unpleasant happened in our life. It's not so much about the choice, but it's more an experience of it. And then it's, of course, how we actually respond to it, how we will view it. And what I'm saying in the gentle way of the heart is that we will always have pleasant and unpleasant experience. But what is the difference is that if we come from our true self, we don't take that personal. We just take it like, I had an experience. It's an experience. And by then becoming a little bit neutral to it, it doesn't let us to be affected, because we can still have that inner smile where we are connected to the love in our heart, and we feel good within, even though when we have an unpleasant experience. And that is one of the beautiful things of being human and live a life, is that you could have coexisting at the same time, just like if I'm a physicist, like you have a glass of water where you have both ice and water existing, and you can have the same thing. You can have that within yourself, that pleasant love radiating and so on, at the same time that you have an unpleasant experience. But the difference is that you don't let that unpleasant experience to take over and distract you from having that core within yourself.
Mm-hmm. And you see that as a focus on the divine, correct?
Yes.
All right. And you also have a chapter that you call on what you call the divine world. And that's you describing what life is like when you do keep that love focus in your heart all the time. Is that a fair way of saying that?
Yes, it is. And I describe in that chapter a little bit what I mean by the divine, which I can just very simply state that it is actually our true self. All of our true self are the divine. And it's like it's not separated. We are all unified in it. And so a lot of the things in what I describe in the gentle way of the heart, when we can live by that, we strive for it. And one of the key elements is to realize that you don't seek perfection. It's not to be perfect, to become like a guru or something like that. It's all only about acceptance. It's only about accepting exactly who you are, accepting other people and so on. And that is when you come in to live your life. It's not to strive for perfection. And when you can live from that point of view of accepting the reality of what it is, accepting other people for what they are, and accepting yourself, you actually will live in the divine world. Because you live in the divine world, because you become the divine yourself, you are actually living your true self. And I make a metaphor about the tree showing how everything is interconnected, and the tree is our divine, and the leaf in the tree might be what we consider to be our person, but we are all connected. There is no separation. Before we end, could I make just a comment, Elin?
Please.
And that is a little bit about the book, something I wish maybe I should have put more emphasis on in the introduction, because this is a little bit how I view spiritual teaching. It should have both an intellectual component, an emotional component, and an experiential component. Mm-hmm. So the book, The Gentle Way of the Heart, is a 10-week course, I would call it. It's 10 chapters, mm-hmm. and it's about to read one chapter 1 week. After reading the chapter, you do it a little bit like an intellectual process, because you try to understand the word, what it means, and so on. And then you do the exercises. And the exercises brings it into experiential experience. You experience by actually following the exercises. And they're not only meditations. Some of them is a little bit stopping for a few seconds in your everyday life and notice things and so on.
Yeah.
And so you have an experience, an experiential component. And then the third is, then you read the chapter again. And when you read the chapter again, after has passed it through your brain and your experience, you will actually feel it. Then you will open up the emotional component, and you will feel from the heart as you read it. And then when these three are actually incorporated, then you can start living it.
Yes, that's really a wonderful way. I had wished I had the time to do that, but I'll tell you something. I read your book, and I felt like I understood what I was reading, and it resonated with a lot of what I work with also. And yet, when I went to formulate the questions I wanted to ask you, I couldn't remember it, which is an interesting thing. It felt like it went in so easily that I couldn't differentiate very well. It was more like it was a entire meal, you know, that I had consumed, and I couldn't tell you exactly what I had eaten, but I knew I felt good. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, you had a feeling about it. And I know many people have said, I had a workshop actually at Stanford or an evening event. I have one coming up in about 3 weeks in May at Stanford again. This is with students and so on. And and then I was teaching actually it from doing everything in the reverse. We had actually some meditation and breath work done by someone else. And then I took in guided meditations, which is very much the exercises in the books. And then I spoke about it. And by doing the exercises and having that experience, people actually grasp it in a very different way. And they could walk away a little bit what you said, not having exactly understood everything, but they felt it and they knew it somehow.
That's very interesting.
To integrate into your beingness, because when the knowledge has been integrated into your beingness, you cannot take it apart any longer. It's part of you.
Yes, yes. So I did end up going back through the book a second time, and it would have been good to go through a third time because it does, it feeds your heart at the same time that it's feeding your mind, as you say, and then when you do the exercises also, you have the experience of it. So that's really nice. I'm glad you explained that because I was kind of puzzled. I usually do remember a book after I read it, but I was just going, now, what did he even talk about? What did he say? You know? But then when I went back, I went, oh, yeah, I know this. You know, it's just like it just came into me and settled in all the right places, so I couldn't find anything outstanding anymore. It's very interesting.
Yes.
Thank so thanks. That was an interesting experience with your book. Well, thank you so much. I know we had a little bit of technological issue getting you on the show here this morning, for which I apologize, but it's certainly been worth it. And I want to, what's your website and how can people find your book to buy? Is it on Amazon?
It's on Amazon, and they can find my website also. It's very easy. It's called, the website is gentleway, as one word, .me, M-E.
Gentleway.me, okay.
Yes. And I'm putting up a little information there. I'm planning also to actually put out some meditations, and which is a little bit like we just talked about, and I will do that with time. It's just sometimes, since I'm also a professional scientist, it's sometimes a little bit challenging for me to find the time for everything.
Well, I'm sure most everybody listening has no idea what you're talking about. I certainly don't. Yeah.
But so these will come too, and and I'm right now planning to go out actually on a new lecture tour and also writing maybe a new book about spirituality and science, because I'm a scientist also, I'm a spiritual teacher, and I have a particular view on this, and I think it's very important because we live very much today in a materialistic world, and we have to integrate these two aspects into our being, because otherwise the world might go in not a very good detour. And when we integrate this, we have the opportunity to create something beautiful.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you for writing this book. When you get the other one written, let me know, please. I'd love to talk with you about that and learn what you have to say. I live with a scientist, so I have some idea of some of the issues. So thank you so much for writing this book and for taking the time to be with us here on Full Power Living today. I'm sure your gentle, loving approach is helpful to many, many, many people, and thank you for sharing it with the world.
Thank you so much, Aileen, and I'm very delighted for this show, and I also can feel all the listeners out there. Thank you very much for listening in.
Yes, all right. So remember that next week we have Dr. Platt, and we're talking about adrenaline and a new way to look at making yourself well. And in the meantime, our producer is Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, and I'm Aileen Dillon, your host for Full Power Living, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become. See you next week.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Aileen Dillon.